Welcome to the I Spy with My MyoEye podcast. I am your host, Brittany Murphy. I am a certified oral facial myologist, registered dental hygienist, and lifelong learner. My goal with this podcast is to bring you up to date in current literature and expand your knowledge of oral facial myofunctional disorders so that together we can get to the root cause of the problem. You ask, we'll answer by collaborating with true pioneers and specialties associated with the myo world. Join me on this journey as we dive into the life-altering world of tethered oral tissues and airway space. Let's do this thing. Quick disclaimer, all content expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the speakers and is for informational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Because every person is so unique, you should always consult with your specialized healthcare professional. Sarah Sweeney is a board-certified speech-language pathologist, feeding specialist, and oral facial myologist. She founded Sunshine Speech Therapy in 2019, a private practice centered on providing speech, feeding, and myofunctional therapy to patients across the lifespan. An avid learner, she has completed two 28-hour myo courses and is on the cusp of qualifying as a qualified oral facial myologist. Sarah's passion for myofunctional therapy began when she had a client whose craniofacial development and tongue tie were impeding his ability to speak, and she knew she had to get to the root of the problem to help him. She then discovered that her own child's piggy eating and sleep-disordered breathing were caused by an oral facial myofunctional disorder. Sarah enjoys putting the fun in myofunctional therapy and pours her heart into making therapy effective and joyful. Good morning, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast. I'm super excited to finally have you on here.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here.
Yes, I am. I have so many questions for you. I always love speaking with, you know, speech language pathologists with that background in myo, because the two complement each other so well. And oftentimes, you know, where I am, there's not a lot of SLPs that have that myo background. So We're working pretty much in tandem, which is awesome. So I always love having you guys on here to just kind of talk about the importance and also the difference between speech and myofunctional therapy. But before we get into all those awesome questions that I have for you, let's have you introduce yourself to the listeners and Absolutely. Let us know how you got into this and everything about you.
Happily. Okay. So I'm Sarah Sweeney. I'm located in Richmond, Virginia. I own and operate Sunshine Speech Therapy, and we are a private practice that specializes in early language development, feeding, and myofunctional therapy.
Awesome. And how did you get into myofunctional?
Oh gosh, I feel like I'm going to take up your whole podcast telling you about that. And brevity is not my strong suit, but I will try my darndest. So I used to work in the public schools as an SLP, and then I started my private practice when COVID flipped everything on its head, right? And I realized kids were really still in need of services in home. So I happened to meet this little guy in his home, 3 years old, and he had been working with another SLP. He was, when I started with him, working with a school SLP. He was not making any progress on his speech sound goals. Like we're holding his tongue down. We're doing this, that, and the other, trying to get those K and G sounds, right? And I knew there was something different about his craniofacial development, but because I was not trained in myo at the time, I had no idea what that was. After working with him for about a year and still really not seeing any progress and seeing how frustrated he was and his parents were, and myself and his other SLP were, I started doing some probing, some research, learned a little bit about myo just through Googling, Trying to find another myofunctional therapist in my area at the time. I found one who was considered so amazing, found her, called her. She wasn't practicing anymore.
Oh, no.
So I say, I did what any reasonable person would do. And I said, honey, I'm getting the credit card and I'm signing up for this 28-hour course. Because they had just started offering them online through IAOM. And so I was trained originally with Christy Gatto and Amanda Chastain. I went through that course. And so we started kind of putting the pieces together. and got him the help that he needed, started him with a myo program. He needed, surprise, surprise, he needed a tongue tie release. And his feeding, his speech, everything, it was just incredible, the progress he made. So from there, I've taken so many courses. I continue to take courses. I am right now, I'm like on the cusp of getting my QOM.
Hey.
I passed the test and I'm submitted my case study. So I'm waiting. But I am myo obsessed. I am myo passionate. And not only is that story just such an amazing one in my history as a therapist, one of my whys, but my other why is my son was a myo special case, myo disaster. I can say it because he's my son. And with my husband, because it's largely genetic, right? So, and he knows that. So my son's had his ties released. My son's gone through myo with me. My son's in the middle of expansion right now.
Oh, awesome.
And something I think is so, you know, it's so powerful as a clinician to have that parent experience and perspective, you know, because I've been through it. I'm going through it.
Yeah. You know, that's funny you say that because we have one of our local providers here, Dr. Sky Zeller. I always talk about her a lot to our patients because she's like one of the best in our area. And she's also been through it as a parent and obviously a clinician over and over and over again. But to be able to let parents know, like, look, she gets it from both angles. And it's so important, especially when it comes to all this stuff, because, and I say this all the time on the podcast, but you know, families come in and they're thinking that they're just coming to you for speech. And now you're referring for a sleep study. You're referring to the ENT, you're referring to the dentist, the release provider. And it's like, whoa, like their minds are super blown, super overwhelmed, thankful, of course, for everything that you're teaching them and educating them on, but extremely overwhelming. So to be able to have somebody that has just been through it as a parent and can kind of hold your hand in that way, I feel that it's just so profound.
It really is. It really, really is. And I am completely transparent with them because you are exactly right. We have so many families come in. They're like, oh, he's having trouble with L, or his S and Z sound a little slushy, or he hasn't been able to get R for years. And they think it's just going to be this straight up articulation therapy. I do. Basically, every child that comes into our clinic, unless they are truly just, they're concerned about language delay, which can sometimes be caused by tongue ties because they don't have the mobility, which is a whole other can of worms. But I have every child come in and do a comprehensive eval. I look at everything. I say, bring a snack. I want to watch them eat. Bring this. I want to see how their mouth moves. And I know this may not make sense to you as the parent, but sometimes, well, it's just the thing with parents don't know what they don't know.
Right.
You know, and it can be super overwhelming. And there are cases where parents go, I don't really want to pursue that. And I say, I respect that. We'll go with what you're comfortable with, but I will be chiming in every few months if I continue to see issues, because ethically, I've got to be giving your child all the support that they need.
Absolutely. Now, how do you feel? And I'm sure this also can take up hours and hours, but how has your practice changed since you started incorporating myo? Like, would you say, even like treatment plan wise, like, would you say you do myo before you do speech? Do you do them in tandem? Like, any information on that you can give us?
That's such a great question. So of course it varies individual to individual, but if I have a child come in and they are old enough to participate in a myofunctional program and they have an oral facial myofunctional disorder, my main focus initially is myo. Now I always tell parents, if we are working on speech sounds, I might sprinkle a little bit of speech sound drill in there, experiment with what, and it just kind of depends on where we are in our myofunctional program. Because if we're working on tongue tip elevation, that's usually one of the first things I'm working on with most of my kids. If they have an orofacial myofunctional disorder, not always, but often, they really have difficulty with that elevation to the incisive papilla. So what sound are we making? La, right? We're doing that L sound. So if that's not in their repertoire, I'll kind of experiment with adding that in. But usually my main focus is myo, because we'll find that, oh my gosh, if all of the muscles in the mouth are able to do what they need to do, we're able to make those sounds super easily.
Now, can you talk more about the R sound? Because there are so many frustrated families and kiddos and speech language pathologists out there that is like, what? Like, this has been 7 years in the making, and we're not anywhere farther than when we started.
Don't I know it? Side note, before I was trained in Mayo and I was in the public schools, I had no knowledge of really, they give us like maybe 30 minutes in grad school where they're like tongue ties. Babies sometimes have difficulty with nursing because of tongue ties. Other than that, it doesn't really affect speech, which new research, of course, is coming out that shows us differently. And also, clinical experience is a level of EBP, right? And so I wish I could go back to all of those kids that were in the schools that, like, my fifth graders working on R and anyway, and look under their tongue and give them a comprehensive Mayo evaluation, but I digress. So, there are two different ways of making R sounds. And one of them involves taking the lateral margins of the border, excuse me, the lateral margins of the tongue, lifting them up posteriorly, right? And another variation of R involves curling the tongue back and flexing and tensing it. So I find R is almost always the canary in the coal mine if we're working with slightly older kids and they're not able to say that sound. There's something going on with their tongues. They're not able to move it, shape it, get the muscles to do what they need it to do. Sometimes also, if their palate is extraordinarily narrow, they don't have like the margins are too small for them to really get it up and make that sound too. So there are a lot of moving parts and pieces when it comes to addressing that tricky, tricky R. But I tell you, I've had kids where they were very, very restricted. They went through release, they went through Mayo, R all of a sudden came very, very quickly.
That's amazing. Now, are there ever times where you would have them go through expansion first before you did work with them?
Absolutely.
Or, okay. You want
Absolutely.
to talk a little bit about those cases?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, again, it's a case by case thing, and it also depends if parents are willing to expand. I've also had a lot of really interesting conversations with dental providers or orthodontists who think that I've heard it's too early to expand. I've heard it's too late to expand. And I try my darndest to stay very, very professional and respectful because I am a speech pathologist. But I know that's not true. And I'll try to send them to another provider. But those cases, if their jaws aren't able to fit together, if their chin is very, very recessed, if their palate is quite collapsed and quite narrow, things like S, Z, CH, SH, they're typically sound very lateralized. They cannot shoot the air, if you will, where it needs to. There's not the right place for the air to be shot. So acoustically, it's just not going to sound right.
Absolutely. Now, your son, you said he's in palatal expansion. What type of
Yes.
expander is he in?
BioBlock.
Awesome. And how long
And
has he been in it?
he's been in it for about 3 months and he broke the front wires on it. So we are getting a new one made right now. Oh
Oh,
no. He's
no.
been a
Now,
firecracker.
how have you found it treating your son? Because sometimes family's tough, and sometimes we want to just give our family members to other providers to work with.
Absolutely. I dare say it is one of the greatest challenges of my life. But what I will say, so he was released. So he actually had maxillary buccal ties released, upper lip, and his tongue. He had a mean posterior tongue tie. He had all of those released 2 years ago. And we went, I mean, he doing the stretches, I tell parents, I'm very, very transparent. And I say, listen, of course, if sutures aren't placed, I'm really happy to see more providers are placing sutures.
Sure.
We did not have that option with this provider at the time. I tell them stretching is hell on earth. I say it's hell on earth. It's not going to be fun. However, it is a necessary evil for a life-altering outcome. And I'm like, you can do it, mama. I'm like, call me if you're stretching and you're having a hard time. I will be your cheerleader because you can do this. You can do this. But he checked all of the boxes, Brittany. Sleep disordered breathing. from a very young age. Again, it's, I can't beat myself up because I didn't know what I didn't know. And again, that's something that's so great. I can tell parents. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you experience this. Parents in tears. They feel so guilty. Why didn't anybody tell me this? How did I not know this? And I'm like, listen, I'm a speech pathologist. Like, the mouth is supposed to be our thing. I didn't know with my own child, right? So just once you know, you do better and you just forgive yourself. Mm-hmm. So, but he super selective eating, super selective eating. What's fascinating, no speech sound issues. So that's why I wasn't in tune with it from a young age. His speech sounds were fine,
right?
But he's got such a deep, deep, deep bite. He would just sweat and snore as a little toddler in his bed, you know? And I just thought that was him tooth grinding. Oh, you could hear it sometimes during the day, and ADHD symptoms. So he checks almost all of the boxes, and between his releases and having expansion now, of course, we're not done by any stretch. Huge improvement already with his feeding and his sleeping.
Now, how do you find it with, you treat only pediatrics or do you see adults as well?
I see adults as well now, which has been amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that little mini population, those 2, 3, 4 year olds, mm-hmm. how do you find the readiness for their release to be? Do you find sometimes we're not recommending it because maybe behavior is an issue and, you know, stretching might be an issue? Walk me through what your experience has been with that age group.
Absolutely. Of course, the children, and I don't have one of these, I don't know how they exist, but that are so naturally compliant. Ones that are like, yes, I'll do what you want me to do. Easy. I want to. I'm like, amazing, right? I typically look at a few things. I really try to get them to be able to lift their tongue. I try to see, I want them to elevate. I want them to be able to suction a little bit, doing our cluckies together. I want them to lateralize. So I try to make it really fun. All of those cases that I've seen so far need feeding therapy. So we start with some feeding therapy and I try to get those skills. So my markers for readiness are really after release, will they be able to come with me and be at home with their parents and move their tongues around a little bit? And of course, I'm talking about 6 months to 12 months plus. Of course, if we're with babies, that's not going to be the case, but I don't work with infants. Uh-huh. I'm not trained in that. And I don't feel ethically like it's my place to be treating them. I hope one day to get trained further and do that, but that's not the case. Mm-hmm. If I do have a child who has really strong oral aversions, mm-hmm. really, really don't want our fingers in their mouth, really don't feel comfortable engaging with those exercises and movements I want them to do, we mm-hmm. may wait a little while. I've had some where they come in just every now and then, and we get them comfortable with me putting my fingers in their mouth and mom and dad putting their fingers in their mouth. We want to really get them in a place where they're not scared. It's hard sometimes because I do tell parents, I'm like, listen, we could put them in for release and we could get sutures done and we don't have to do that stretching. But if we feel like it's going to cause more problems because they're not willing for us to play around, we'll wait.
Right. Yeah. Now I have to say, on topic of this age group, your Instagram page, like, I want to be one of your patients. You are so fun. The games that you play with them, and they're so engaged, and it's just so cute to hear their little voices in the background respond back to you. Yeah. So talk a little bit about that, because I think one of the things that I hear a lot from myofunctional therapists is obviously compliance. Like, how do you get patients to actually do this homework at home? But it sounds like your patients are just so excited to be there and to participate. And I think a lot of it is just you as a person. You just have this like vibrancy to you. But talk a little bit about ways that you find have worked to treat that age population successfully.
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you. Thank you. That's very kind. I like to say you can tell that I love what I do. I feel very blessed, very, very blessed to be doing what I'm doing. I've always, from a very, very young age, I knew I wanted to work with kids. I was a babysitter and a nanny and worked at a daycare. And I come from a long line of teachers. My sister's a teacher. My mother's a teacher. I just love connecting with kids. Well, how is that helpful to other people? Let's give some tips and figure some things out, right? finding their interests, respectfully listening to them, using the first few sessions. Yes, like we want to be as productive as possible as therapists. And if I'm asking a five-year-old to do hard things and I haven't built rapport with them and they don't find coming to me exciting and interesting and feel like I have genuine care for them, it's not going to happen. So I really try to make sure the first session or two of therapy is us just talking, me learning about them. Oh my gosh, you love Bluey. I have a Bluey house. Oh my goodness, you're obsessed with Minecraft. So is my son. Do you, you know, just trying to get into their interests, listen to them, and not jumping straight into this is the work we have to do. I typically will maybe show them one thing, one move, and we take it from there.
Yeah.
You know, but just making it play-based, having lots and lots of games with what we do. And just remembering, it's not easy to remember this every day. We all know this as therapists. I will have to wake up and remind myself, I choose to do this. This is what I love to do. I don't have to do this. This is what I want to do. And having that positive mindset before you start your day brings that positive, like high vibrational energy to your kids. And man, they can feel it.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Well, again, for anybody listening who doesn't follow Sarah, you should, because it's fun to watch everything that she does and all of her cool toys and things that she has at her office, which congratulations, because you did just open a new office, right?
I did. I am loving it. I am loving it. And we have room for more therapists. And I want to circle back really quickly.
Yeah.
You asked me how, you know, getting trained in and incorporating myofunctional therapy has changed my practice. It completely changed my practice. My special interest and focus group and demographic of specialization, if you will, initially is working with autistic kids that need language support. I still work with those kids and I find a lot of them have myofunctional issues. So it has been fascinating to try to incorporate the two and support those kids with that might have sensory feeding differences. Sometimes it's part sensory and sometimes there's also oral motor dysfunction going on. So that's been fascinating. And then every clinician that I bring on to work for me, I pay for them to go through Sandra's course.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because I want everyone on board with Mayo.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, I always give so much credit to Sandra. I took Sandra Holtzman's course as well. And, I've also taken a bunch of other introductory courses, as I find a lot of us do. And the part that I absolutely, absolutely love about Sandra's is her phase two, like bringing on those suctioning skills, because in a lot of other programs, you know, and I'm not saying there's one right way to do Mayo. There's definitely not. And every therapist has their own success in their own ways. However, when you're working on like that swallowing pattern and you don't solidify those suctioning skills, it's just literally like setting them up for failure, I feel like.
Yes.
And when I first became a myofunctional therapist, one of the first courses I took was more like a blueprint type of program. Like you kind of follow these exercises, session one, session two, session three, and so on. And sometimes, you know, that swallow is introduced very early on and it's like, they're struggling and it's like, well, wait a sec, like, what am I missing here? And then when I took Sandra Holtzman's course, I was like, ah, I'm missing a whole lot here.
I felt that way too. Absolutely.
Right?
Yes. Well, and it's the thing where we're never using like a recipe book for Mayo. We're never going, everyone does the same steps. But right. I think it has a very logical order of operations throughout that can really help us to, I always tell parents, there's a hierarchy to what we're doing. Yes. And if your child can't suction, they don't know where the spot is, the lateral, you know, borders of their tongue can't come up and seal, we are not going to be able to work on swallowing. It's going to go, the water's going to go everywhere. The food's going to go everywhere, you know? So I love, and I also found the course to be so engaging. Again, I have been a virtual girl with my 2 28-hour trainings. Both were absolutely phenomenal. And Sandra's had me going, okay, I'm engaged. I got this. I got this. I'm going through this. Yes. And, you know, and it was just a phenomenal experience. And she's just a lovely human being.
She is. She certainly is. But yeah, that course was definitely life-changing. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about, so differences between speech therapy, myofunctional therapy, and also, you know, like when I get calls from patients, you know, I try to, again, there's not a lot of speech therapists in our area with a myo background. So I'm trying to direct them. There's one, she's a little bit farther away. That's usually who I end up referring them to. But anyways, like I try to explain to parents that you typically would want to work with a private-based speech therapist because they're going to work on things differently than like a school-based speech therapist would. And, you know, so if as a speech therapist yourself, can you explain how that really does differ from being in a school setting to private practice?
100%. I'd be happy to. And it's so great since I worked in the public schools initially and I've been in private practice now for about 4 years. I have to have this chat with many parents who are understandably disappointed if their child is not eligible for services or they don't work on feeding and swallowing in the schools. Mm-hmm. So in the public school system, it is legally mandated that a child is eligible for services only if their speech disorder, speech or language disorder, is interfering with their ability to access the curriculum, right? It's getting in the way of their ability to do schoolwork. So say Johnny has a really hard time with receptive language in the classroom. He's not necessarily able to follow the teacher's directions with just her saying them once, and or when they're reading, he's having a hard time processing the language. He needs extra support. If a child has myofunctional issues and they're having difficulty with their oral resting postures, they're having difficulty, let's just say drooling. They're drooling because their mouth is open. They can't control their saliva. Almost every child with a myofunctional disorder has difficulty with their swallow, with feeding. That doesn't relate to the school curriculum. It simply does not. Mm-hmm. And speaking for myself and all of the other amazing school-based SLPs that are my friends and my former colleagues, there's just not the training.
Right.
So we're just not going to find that. I am sure in different areas, there are amazing SLPs with that training. They still can't use it in the schools. I have considered in the past having a young child. I had a few moments with running a business because you know how running a business comes with its own really, really unique and abundant stressors during certain phases. I'm just going to go back to the schools. Which comes with its own stressors as well. It is not a cakewalk, and I'm not trying to suggest that at all. However, I couldn't do myo. Mm-hmm. I really couldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and my business is in a wonderful place. No, I'm not in that mindset at all. But for parents wondering if it's an option there, it's simply not an option, and it's not applicable because it does not interfere with their ability to get through school. Now, might they be really tired from sleep disordered breathing so they can't focus during school? You know, there are all of those things, but the schools don't. I mean, that's just not under the umbrella of things that they treat.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And then if you had a phone call from a parent, or I guess I'm just asking you on this podcast as a question, if you can explain how one would explain the difference between speech therapy and myofunctional therapy to a parent.
Absolutely. So traditionally, speech therapy is focusing on a whole host of different disorders, right? So we might have fluency or stuttering. We might have language issues, whether it be creating language and speaking or understanding language. We have our speech sound disorders, which before I was trained in myo, didn't realize they're very related, but that's a whole, it's a whole other can of worms. We might be treating voice, which is actually one of my passions. I love voice as well. But those are things that are treated by a speech pathologist that are very different than myofunctional therapy. The main overlapping disorder, if you will, would be feeding, which speech pathologists treat separately from myo. But myo really focuses on, again, I know you know this, so I'm talking to a parent. Myo focuses on, where does the tongue live? How does it move? How is that child swallowing? What's going on with the child's lips and their cheek muscles? Are they really tight? Do they have pain? It's really this almost holistic approach to oral motor function and feeding that is very, very different than most of the things speech pathologists treat. There is a lot of overlap, but in a traditional setting, if an SLP is not trained in Mayo, they also, and I don't want to get in trouble for this, so I want to make sure I word myself very carefully, but typically speaking, if a speech pathologist is not trained in Mayo, they also don't really have a deep understanding of tethered oral tissues. Mm-hmm. Not always, right, but right. That was certainly the case for me.
Yeah.
And the case for a lot of my colleagues.
Yeah. And I add from, you know, colleagues as well, hearing that, I will never forget my first Mayo course. Of course, a lot of the, you know, courses are like half speech language pathologists, half registered dental hygienists. And mm-hmm. I was so surprised to hear the speech pathologist be like, this isn't things that, you know, we are taught to look at. Like, I don't look at the way the teeth occlude. I don't look at mm-hmm. what's underneath the tongue, underneath the lips. And, you know, even for me as a hygienist, I mean, we get very little training. Same thing like you spoke about in the beginning of the episode, like maybe a couple slides, that true ankyloglossia attached to the very tip of the tongue could impact breastfeeding mm-hmm. or bottle feeding, speech. They can't bring their tongue past their lower lip. And, you know, countless times, even after my Mayo training, when I was still a hygienist, you know, and I would obviously see things much differently as I did before I took my courses, and I would try to bring it to, you know, the doctor's attention, and he'd be like, okay, stick your tongue out. And I'd be like, but no, like, that's not enough. Like, they might be able to protrude their tongue. That's just like literally one function of the tongue. So let's do more here. But again, it's not his fault, right? It wasn't his fault. It wasn't my fault for not knowing any of this stuff before. It's just, unfortunately, not common knowledge as of yet. I think even in the time I've been a myofunctional therapist, the field has grown immensely, and I know it will only continue to do so. So for parents that are, you know, listening to this episode, it's okay. And it's okay that you didn't know. It's really even okay that your provider didn't know, because they literally just might not know.
Exactly. I always tell parents, you were not intentionally misled.
Right.
You were not intentionally misled. And I am so hopeful. I've heard a little bit from Linda D'Onofrio about how there's this advocacy to get orofacial, myofunctional, some sort of course mm-hmm. in the grad school curriculum.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm so hopeful. It's not happening yet. And I'm sort of trying to figure out if I can be an advocate in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Because it's a game changer for treating patients. It is if we are teaching children to make compensations against oral restrictions, to make sounds, we're creating pain and tension in other areas of their body. Like, we're not solving the problem.
Right. And mm-hmm. I think, again, just having that knowledge, I mean, I think any speech pathologist that has Mayo training can't not then begin to, you know, incorporate Mayo, because they're going to find that their patient caseload is just going to be much more successful.
Yes.
But I always say, you know, even for dental hygienists, like, if you don't want to become a myofunctional therapist, that's totally fine. Don't become a myofunctional therapist. However, I think that every registered dental hygienist, again, we're in the mouth all day, every day. We see these patients 2-3 times a year. You should be able to spot when to refer. And that is all that we're asking, right? Get them to the mm-hmm. right professional. Mm-hmm. It is our duty. And, you know, there's still, unfortunately, a lot of dental practices out there that aren't screening for sleep disorder breathing, even with that 2017 policy statement, which is like bang my head on a wall right now. But again, just the knowledge to have it out there so that we can just continue helping.
Absolutely. Just advocacy, putting that information out there. I keep saying, I think I wrote to you in our initial contact, I'm like, I keep saying I'm going to make, I have all my podcast stuff here. I have not made time for it, but I'm like, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to do the, just because these parents are devastated. I was devastated when I realized, oh, it coulda, shoulda, woulda, had mm-hmm. I had that knowledge before, how I could have set my son up for even greater success, you know? So
absolutely. Yes. Is there anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with before we wrap up?
Oh gosh. You know, I think we touched a lot on, just for our parent listeners, telling them again to not feel guilt for not having this information sooner. Everybody's doing the best they can. And if they're listening to this podcast, they're getting a lot of really good info. I think that's really, really important.
And where can people find you?
Oh, yes. So you can find me at Sarah Desmayo on Instagram. And I also just our website for our practice is mysunshinespeechandmayo.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah, for taking the time to come on here and chat with me. I'm super happy that this date worked out for us both. And I hope you have a good rest of your day. And we're going to have you back on again because I'm always wanting to re-ask questions.
Absolutely. Well, it was my honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of I Spy with My Maya Y. If you want to hear more about these episodes, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or feel free to contact me at hello@myctom.com. Don't forget to subscribe as well and let us know of any subject or guest speaker you'd like to hear from. Help spread the word by sharing today's episode on your social media page. You can find me on Facebook at CT Oral Facial Myology or Instagram handle CT_OralFacial_Myology. Everybody have a wonderful day.